Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham. For all your steel needs, call their friendly experts.
The sun shone, it didn't rain, and over 60,000 people enjoyed another fabulous Lincolnshire show.
Everyone's feeling really proud. I think what this demonstrates is the wonderful Lincolnshire and what the community is all about. It's all about us coming together and celebrating the wonders of Lincolnshire.
We'll hear live at the show from the NFU, LRSN, Sean Sparling, and Round Britain charity tractor hero Taryn Lee, who's raised thousands for farming charity. Plus, quad bikes and ATVs, safe, but training's essential.
It is safe in the right hands, provided people know how to use them.
The Week in Agriculture. This is the Farming Programme with Steve Orchard.
And of course, we'll check the livestock and grain markets and the week's farming weather. Hello, this is the Farming Programme podcast for Sunday, 23rd of June, 2024. I'm Steve Orchard and I have a sunburnt head and I certainly exceeded my 10,000 steps a day at Lincolnshire Show, which was fabulous again. Great to see so many friends, socialise, eat and talk too much and learn a lot too. Show director Charlotte Powell asked if she could say a quick thank you.
I have to say thank you to all the exhibitors. We had over 550 exhibitors this year. Thank you for all the contractors. Thank you for all the wonderful team. And I have to say an extra special thank you to all our stewards. We have over 200 volunteers that help. And if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't have this show.
It really was too hot to be wearing a suit and a bowler hat. Day one started with a lovely breakfast with the CLA, thank you, and a visit by NFU President Tom Bradshaw.
Well, look, today there's a lot going on about the election. Clearly, we've heard the words about food security and national security. We've got some policies that have been committed to within party manifestos, but it really is about trying to get those commitments now during this election campaign that will underpin a thriving, profitable farming sector moving forwards.
There doesn't seem to be a huge amount committed to the rural economy in the manifestos, as far as we can see.
Look, I think if you went back to previous years just to see food having the profile it has within manifestos, we'd have been delighted. It's hugely worrying for members right the way across Lincolnshire that that budget has not been committed to, because that underpins our resilience as a farming sector. It delivers the food security for the country. It enables the delivery of those environmental targets which have been legislated. So the budget is absolutely essential.
What kind of budget are you looking for, or the NFU asking for?
So we've been asking for £5.5 billion across the UK, which is just about £4 billion here in England. It's an uplift on what we've done previously. But we are now in this position where we are delivering services for society. The contract with government is about public money for public goods. It's about delivering those legislated targets. We also need some budget to deliver resilience within our farm businesses so that we can continue to produce the food, which is now being highlighted as such a priority.
You talked about environmental matters a few seconds ago. Last time you and I met, back in October last year, we were overlooking what really just looked like a lake near Bardney. It's got a little bit better since then, but environmental matters are key and that requires money, doesn't it?
Look, the flooding here in Lincolnshire over the last 9 months has been quite exceptional. It started off in October with Storm Babette and then just continued. And where we all wanted an early dry spring, unfortunately, April was continuing showery and so was May. So look, it's been a really challenging period. There's been a commitment to the Farm Recovery Fund. We need that money out of the door as quickly as possible to help support the cash flow of those farms, which many of whom have got bare land now this summer, which they would never normally expect to have. But the role of the Environment Agency is absolutely crucial. They say that their funds are restricted, which I fully recognise. We need them to be able to spend more of their budget on maintenance rather than on capital projects. There needs to be political will to enable that delivery. They also must have a focus on their role for delivering food security. You can't have words on a piece of paper around food security and national security and then not prioritise food when it comes to the Environment Agency. There's a simple choice for government. Lincolnshire produces a considerable amount of food for society. We want it to continue doing that, but to do it, you must enable the Environment Agency to prioritise that land for food production.
And if that land isn't available for food production, it's got to come from somewhere else.
And it'll come from overseas, and it'll have this out of sight, out of mind attitude. We have no control over those systems of production, and that is simply not acceptable. We, as in the NFU, want to stand for fair trade. Now, fair trade is very, very different to free trade. It means that we expect the food that's imported to be produced to the same standards of production that our farmers across England are very, very proud to produce to. And here in Lincolnshire would be a great example of that.
Just going back to the election, not going to get political at all. We're likely to see an awful lot of new MPs this time round, given the number that are standing down. That must present you with a challenge and an opportunity.
I was going to say, I think it presents us with a huge opportunity. We here in the NFU are proudly apolitical. We will work with the government of the day to put the solutions in place that underpin that profitable, thriving farming industry. But having parliamentarians that understand farming is essential. So our job is to engage with them. Yesterday I did calls with all of the political parties and we had about 70 different candidates engage with us. We've seen over 300 candidates now during this election campaign so far. But after the election, we will be there providing solutions, working with all of the new MPs, and we have our first reception in mid-July, which hopefully they'll all attend and be inducted into the NFU.
Well, because you can't choose the government, the public choose the government, but you've got to work with whoever is in number 10.
We will do, and look, we've got a really good relationship with all political parties, and I'm not just saying that genuinely. We've worked well with the Secretary of State, Steve Barclay, and his ministers. We've worked well with the shadow team, and look, when we hit the election get the results on the 5th of July, we're here to provide those solutions, to represent farmers, make sure the policies are put in place that enable us to continue producing the country's food while delivering those legislated environmental targets. But profitability is absolutely key.
Those new MPs are going to need your help, aren't they?
I hope so.
Tom, thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of the show.
Thank you very much. Great to join you.
Day two brought breakfast with the Lincolnshire Rural Support Network, LRSN, celebrating their 25th anniversary with a special announcement.
If you come across to our stand today, you will see we've got a huge amount of pink going on, which isn't very LRSN generally. So this is because we're launching a brand new project called Women in Wellies, pink welly themed, and it's specifically tailored to really bring women in the farming and agricultural community together. We know that there is a real need for this kind of support for women. There are a lot of women who don't come forward to LRSN for support, and we know that from the research that we've done, a lot of women are feeling quite lonely and isolated, and I think quite a lot of that is because we all have so many plates spinning. So they're very busy, you know, they've quite often got a job off farm as well as being on farm, and so we want to give an opportunity just to have a bit of a break from the day to day. So we'll be bringing people together socially, we'll be moving around the county so that everybody has a chance of being near to one of our sessions. We'll be doing all sorts of different things. So we will have some where we bring speakers in, others where we go for visits to places. We're going to do sausage making and wild medicine walks and all sorts of fun things. Lots of cake along the way.
Is this meant to be purely a social thing, or is there more to it than that?
Little bit more to it than that. So it is going to be led by one of our nurses who has a specialism in women's health. So she's going to be offering the health screening and those conversations about health and wellbeing and about women's health alongside the bringing people together. So really it's got two purposes. One is to offer the health and wellbeing support and access into LRSN services, and the other is to bring women together socially. So we're really excited and we can't wait to get going. The first sessions will be at the beginning of July.
Where could somebody go for more information about this then, Amy?
If you pop to our website, which is lrsn.co.uk, on the front page you will see some pink wellies. If you click that, it will take you straight through to all the booking links for the different sessions. They're all free to attend. We just need you to book on so that we can make sure we've got you written down for catering.
Brilliant. Sounds like a fantastic idea. Women in Wellies from LRSN. Thank you, Amy.
Thank you.
I don't just go to the show for breakfast. Okay, there's lunch and afternoon tea as well. When I was on the LRSN stand, it was perhaps no surprise to see our crop doctor, Sean Sparling, who's been involved with the charity since it started. So we talked agronomy at the show. Enjoying it?
Always enjoy it, Steve. And I think this year more than any other, because as everybody who listened to the farming programme knows, everybody who's involved in this industry, it's just been so awful this year. It seems to have been, we're along for the ride. It's not a year where you can plan and do things and get it right. And, you know, there's only a right and a wrong, and if you get one of them, you're doing well, I think, this year. So it's just nice to get away and just meet up with friends and old customers and colleagues and just get out of the loop for a couple of days.
And it is it's a big, big show, and it's been going around probably for one of the longest in the country. I don't know the statistics on that, but it is so well supported. I mean, 60,000 people over 2 days.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been coming here since I was a little boy. I used to come with my grandpa and sit on the tractors, and it used to move around the county then, but since it's had its firm base here, it gets bigger and bigger every year. And I think this year, for the same reasons, it will be the biggest ever, because people just need an escape and an escape route, really.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, because I was talking to Tom Bradshaw, president of the NFU, only a few minutes ago. And we were talking about the last time I met him was at Bardney with the floods back in October. And it's been a tough old year, and I'm not going to get political and so on because we've got an election coming up. But what we're going to see come July onwards, goodness only knows. There doesn't seem to be an awful lot by way of detail in manifestos and we'll do this and we'll do that. Not asking you who you support or anything like that, because we don't go there. But we're going to need an awful lot of help post-July to sort out the problems that are not made by the weather and so on, that are man-made, if you like.
We are, and it is a massive concern to all of us, I think, because the one thing which is, it's just not being mentioned, agriculture, the environment, nothing is being mentioned apart from odd little sound bites popping out here and there. But I think for any party to ignore the impact, the strength and the importance of agriculture as our one last industry would be a huge mistake. But I really do wonder, you know, a lot of them, the only fresh air they get is Emmerdale, and I really do worry about the state of us going forward, because we face challenges now that we couldn't see coming. And with SFI and everything in place now, you've got to wonder if that's going to carry on. And so, yeah, we're all in limbo a little bit, but farmers being farmers, agronomists being agronomists, we will just do our bit, keep doing our best, and hope that there is the support there behind us. So at some point, they're going to realise they're going to have to support agriculture.
Yeah, because we talked on the programme several times about the danger of SFI taking a lot of land out of food production. And if that land isn't used for food production, that food's got to come from somewhere else.
It has, and we haven't got a lot of friends in the world at the moment. I mean, the world is in a strange state of flux. I think we can all agree on that. And we're no longer in the EU. We're only 60% self-sufficient at best in this country. 67% if you count yams coming from our overseas territories. But 60% is just not good enough. And when you look at, if you look at the dairy industry, for just one example, we are so efficient in the UK with the way we produce food, the way we manage agriculture, we are so efficient. So there are 265 million dairy cows in the world. If every country on earth was as efficient as the UK is, we have less than 40% of the emissions, for example, of other countries. We'd only need 85 million cows instead of 265, because we are so efficient. And that is something that people miss. People don't see that. We get so mixed up with the way the rest of the world is deforesting to produce livestock. And it just isn't like that in the UK. With centuries of managing our environment, so 27% of the whole of the UK's agricultural land is capable of producing food that we can eat. The rest of it is mostly grassland for a reason, so we can produce protein and food off that other land. And it's almost a perfect in example of how farming should be done in the UK.
Do you think, I mean, we hear a lot of talk about the public are more supportive of farmers now than perhaps they have ever been, but do you still think it's taken for granted?
Oh, no question about it. Absolutely no question about it. And the only way it will not be taken for granted is if it starts hitting stomachs. If we stop producing today, nobody would notice for 6 months because of the way that the markets work. And I think that an awful lot of blame has to be taken by supermarkets, two for one, buy one, get one free, 4 pints of milk for a pound. I'm dealing with dairy farmers on a weekly basis, and I know how much money they've lost over the last 12 months. And, you know, cost of production is outstripping what they're getting for the milk. And it's shameful that this one last great industry in the UK can be treated like that. So I really hope there is a step change, that they start to appreciate what they've got, because it's all very well saying you don't know what you've got till it's gone. The fact of the matter is that people don't, they know what they've got, they just don't think they're going to lose it, and they will.
Do you think there's ever a likelihood that prices in the shops that would give a sensible return to farmers will ever happen? Because people surely would just say, well, no, I just can't afford a doubling in price.
Well, we've already seen that over the last 18 months or so, with people talking about the cost of living crisis. But, you know, to be quite honest, it's unsustainable to carry on the way it is at the moment. You can't keep saying to farmers, we're going to pay you this for you. It's the only industry, and this is what gripes me, it's the only industry where the customer tells us what they're going to pay us for what we produce. And it's just not sustainable, because the whole market around sales and food sales is built upon, I want to do one better than that bloke over there, so we're going to cut our price and get the customers in. It is not sustainable. I don't know how long it can go on, but it will finish in yours and my lifetime. Well, when you see farmers taking thousands and thousands of acres of land out of production to put solar panels on because the returns are better over 40 odd years, we can't keep doing that. We should be ring-fencing arable food production in the UK. And that's really, there are people here at the Lincolnshire Show today worth going to talk to about it, because we ought to be acting as a collective. We ought to be like termites. We ought to be one big solid unit that stands up for our rights. It's no good odd people like Tom and Wardy and me standing up and saying our bit when everybody else just carries on. So.
No, because that's one point, that's talking with Tom earlier on, there's going to be an awful lot of brand new MPs this time. There's the biggest number of MPs standing down at this election. There's going to be an awful lot there that don't know enough about farming and agriculture. We need to tell them, as you say, not just us, but every farmer needs to be in touch with their potential candidates to tell those candidates just how important everything is.
That's exactly what needs to happen. And I think, I mean, we're trying to do that within AICC. We're having meetings with people at the moment. But the biggest problem we face is there are about 80 or 90 MPs who understand that they get farming. And it's always the same 80 or 90 we're speaking to. So I think, yeah, there has come a point where you have to accept that most of the ministers we've had as agriculture ministers have never seen a farm before. And, you know, they've read about it once when they were little. But it is more important now than ever before that we support, promote and make them realise just how vital it is to the economy and to everything to do with well-being of the people that live in this country, because we can't afford not to eat.
Anything much to talk about this week, agronomy-wise?
No, only the weather again. I mean, I think since I saw you last week, I've had another 40 mil of rain, and it's, yeah, I mean, we're starting to see things happen in the fields. We're getting beyond the point where it's legal to put fungicides on, so we're through flowering, we're into grain ripening now. Now's the time to put your foliar nitrogen on if you're going for milling wheat. Once you get to milky ripe, now's the time. Potato blight, don't let your guard down at all. But the main thing, really, for me, is spring barley and these spring cereals, spring oats, how fast they are going through growth stages. I had one the other day where I wanted to put some fluroxypyr on for some cleavers within a field of spring oats, and it had just gone past growth stage 31, the cutoff's 31. And so you ask the question, yeah, well, if I'm just a little bit past, will it still be safe? It really isn't. So if you've got fluroxypyr to go on spring oats, don't risk going past it, because you will cause a lot of crop damage, potential yield damage too. So it's just, now's the time of year to just take stock of what you've done, have a look at these crops. Bear in mind, varieties are going to be very, very different in the field. We're already seeing Septoria moving up onto the flag leaf, despite what robust programmes they've had. So I think these next few weeks, it's potato blight, potato blight, potato blight. Keep your eyes open, don't let your guard down. Pests, black aphids moving into spring beans, green aphid, pea aphid, they're all over the peas. We've got pea moth in the peas. We're not quite out of the woods yet. So I can see a light at the end of the tunnel, but unfortunately it's still a train coming.
It still seems to have been a bad year for the little bugs, doesn't it?
It's been a very good year for the little bugs.
For them, it's been not so good for the farmer.
No, it's been every little pest you've seen. I mean, things like pygmy beetle in sugar beet, I haven't seen that as a problem for 15, 20 years. And yet this year we're seeing a lot of damage from pygmy beetle. We're seeing problems with blackleg in sugar beet crops, where the land's so wet, so cold for so long, it's just rotting them out in the soil. So we're seeing things this year, hopefully I'll never see them again in my lifetime.
Is that the problem? Is it all down to the cold, wet weather that we've had so far this year?
Most of it, I believe, is. A lot of things, we had a mild winter, so we didn't have a cold winter to start tackering things down, and that includes disease, but it also includes the pests to try and disrupt their life cycle. We've had a relatively mild run all the way through. We've had a lovely warm spell in May, and we keep getting rain. So all of those things are conspiring. I mean... To be quite honest with you, Steve, if we get sunshine from now, that is what we need. From now, it needs to be unbroken sunshine till August. That way, these crops will finish rather than die, because they've got the potential. They've got water, they're filling well, they just need to finish.
Well, that is how it's looking for the next few days, certainly starting beginning part of the week and heading on through. We're in the mid-20s every day and plenty of sunshine.
That's what we need. And I mean, I shall put my mankini on, and I often walk my fields stripped to the waist. It just gets my legs nice and brown this time of year. So we'll see what happens, really, won't we? If I get my shorts out, that'll get the sun in for the rest of the year, I'm afraid.
Well, just to clarify, when you say stripped to the waist, from bottom up or top down?
Oh no, bottom up, it has to be. You get some funny looks, but you get nice brown legs, Steve.
Good to see you at the show. Let's see what the next
7 days bring.
Cheers, Sean. Back in the studio next week, I'm afraid. On the way, how much was raised and who for by the Round Britain Tractor Run? How safe are ATVs? How could you be safer? What was new at cereals? And how are the markets doing?
The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, supplying the region for over 40 years.
This is the Farming Programme podcast. I'm Steve Orchard. We talked a couple of weeks ago with Lincolnshire farmer Taran Lee, who was about to embark on a mammoth charity tractor run all the way round the coast of Great Britain, well over 3,000 miles, in just 8 days. It wasn't just him, there was a team of people who were all absolutely exhausted because they're back, they've done it, and they raised over £10,000 for Back British Farming and the Farm Safety Foundation's Mind Your Head campaign. At the Lincolnshire Show, Taran spoke to the Farming Programme's Charlotte Lineker about his own reasons for supporting mental health in farming. First, the journey.
We took a fast track tractor around the whole of the outside of the UK to raise awareness for mental health and Back British Farming.
Tell me a little bit about what it was like while you were there.
Very stressful organising it. The logistics of it are absolutely mind-boggling. Starting to relax a bit more now, but yeah, I did three stints on the tractor and it was all 450 miles a day stint, so yeah, it's been an epic journey.
But obviously you did it for such an important reason. Just tell me a little bit more about, I suppose, perhaps your experience, if you're happy to share that, but I suppose why ultimately you felt you had to do this.
Yeah, I've struggled with mental health. As you know, I do my Christmas tractor run in Louth, and on the morning of 2022, my father passed away. So we carried the tractor run on, but it was after that that I started struggling with mental health, and no one talks about it. I was there struggling on my own, and mates are, you know, are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. And that's how you answer. So it's about getting people talking, and we've got to stop this silent killer because people are dying from it.
Just tell me what it means to be here, to kind of tell your story as well.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, Lincolnshire's a proud farming county, so we've had lots of farmers come up to us and congratulate us on the run. I do believe this is the first time a tractor's ever gone round the outside of the UK, so it's a massive achievement, and it's starting to set in now what we've actually done.
Have you already started thinking about what you're going to do next?
No, we're definitely not doing this again. Some people have commented and said, oh, you can do Europe next, but no, we're not doing that.
Not quite yet, you might change your mind. You
know. No, I'm definitely not doing that again. Just thanks to all the sponsors and James Caswell, who's co-organiser, and his dad that have put this tractor on, because JCB wouldn't get on board with us, they wouldn't help us in any way, wouldn't share it on social media for us or nothing. So a massive thank you to James and his father for putting this tractor on and doing this journey with us, and all the sponsors that have made this happen as well. We couldn't do it without them, and the drivers taking days off work and stuff to come and help support the cause.
When are you planning on closing sort of the donations, or do you have a date?
We're not closing the donations yet because the tractor's actually going to go on Cleethorpes Carnival at the end of the month, so we're going to have some donation buckets running at the side of the tractor as well, so keep a lookout for that on the Facebook page. All the links are on there, so...
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Charlotte also got the views of the Farm Safety Foundation's Alex Morley. Why are efforts like this so important?
Farmers are facing so many stresses at the moment. I mean, they face so much more than the general public will face. Things like the weather. For the general public, that could be an inconvenience. It can mean that we can't get out in the garden or do what we want to do. But for farmers, that can have a massive impact on the viability of their business, on whether their crops are going to survive, on whether their animals are going to be in good health and doing well. And that massive impact that can have. They're also facing pressures from government sources, international trade agreements, still the impact of what's going on in Europe and the war in Ukraine and all of that. And this is all creating a perfect storm within farming at the moment, which is putting a huge amount of pressure on our farmers, on those people who are providing us our food for us three times a day, and causing those extra pressures on their mental well-being and their mental health as well.
And we hear so much about how difficult it is to, you know, speak up and find somebody to speak to about these issues.
It's so important that we keep talking. There are some absolutely fantastic charities out there that are there to help, but they can only help if people are talking about this, if they're talking about their own mental well-being, but also talking about it with their friends, with their families, with their colleagues, looking out for each other and asking that question, are you okay? And if you're not happy with the answer, following it up and being aware that some people may be struggling, and just having that conversation can really help, but also reaching out to professionals, to the charities that are out there, can make a massive difference.
And I wanted to ask you more specifically about young farmers in particular as well. Just tell me a little bit around some of those sort of issues that they face. I suppose that, you know, they are quite different to other students perhaps and things like that in schools. What's kind of the challenges for them?
So our own research shows that 95% of young farmers, for us that's farmers under the age of 40, strongly believe that poor mental well-being is the biggest hidden danger facing the industry today. Young farmers are facing so many different pressures. They've got questions over succession and where they stand within their own businesses, within family businesses, but also opportunities within the sector, finding those jobs, keeping those jobs, having that job security that perhaps the rest of us take for granted, as well as being very aware and very alive to all of those pressures that older farmers are facing as well in terms of that viability of their businesses, in terms of those extra stresses that you see across the industry.
What would be your one piece of advice today for anyone that listens to this and thinks, actually, maybe that's somebody I should be reaching out to?
I think my one piece of advice is just to keep talking. We need to keep having this conversation. We need to break down the stigma around mental health. If you're worried about yourself, if you're worried about your friends, your families, your colleagues, then don't just sit there in silence. Don't ignore that gut feeling. Do reach out to each other, reach out to those around you or to the amazing charities that are out there that are there to support.
Obviously, an event like this, I imagine for a lot of them, is kind of an escapism. They can kind of forget about the worries at home just for the day. Do you think that's the case, or do you think it's with them nonstop?
I think coming out and getting off farm is so important. It's an amazing opportunity for everybody to come together and have those conversations and celebrate everything that is absolutely amazing about British agriculture. But ultimately, what you carry with you with farming never leaves you. You're always thinking about what you've got to do at home, what you're not doing today because you've come out to this event. It doesn't stop for farmers. Farmers are regularly working 14, 16 hours a day, 7 days a week. If they're taking time off the farm to come here, they've still got to go back to those jobs at the end of the day.
Well done to all involved who probably don't want to see the inside of a tractor cab for a long time. Let's talk ATVs, all-terrain vehicles. They have a reputation for poor safety, causing accidents, even death. But they are fine if ridden correctly. They're different to normal vehicles and training is essential, as explained by Andy Heitman from the European ATV Safety Institute, EASI.
Yeah, well, ATVs, or what is commonly known as quad bikes, it's a vehicle that is so multi-purpose. It's used in so many different walks of life. It is so adaptable. It's a machine that can access areas that other vehicles can't make. But because it's got four wheels and it's got motorcycle-type controls, it's misconceived as a motorcycle that you can't fall off of. It's a very, very safe machine. It is safe in the right hands, providing people know how to use them. So EASI really, our aim is to blow that misconception out of the water and to educate people that this is what we call a rider active machine. So depending on how active you are, how able you are physically, is going to reflect on how the machine is actually going to operate. So it's a matter of knowing what the machine can do, and it's a matter of knowing what your own limitations are, and then putting those two things together to get the best out of the machine. So being rider active, it's got a fixed axle in the main. Most of the ATVs that are out there at the moment have got a fixed axle. So you do have to move your weight around on the machine to allow one wheel to drive and the other wheel to skid across the top of the surface or to freewheel over the surface, because we're not blessed with a differential as a lot of vehicles are.
What sort of injuries are we seeing, particularly on farms, from misuse or incorrect use of ATVs?
The injuries sort of come in two main areas, really. Head injuries, where the operator is not wearing the PPE, and crush injuries, where they're turning the machine over and pinning themselves into ditches and so on. But that becomes, or that's really down to a lack of understanding on how the machine really operates. Again, it's back to this rider activeness.
So because of the type of vehicle it is, it's got to be driven or ridden, whatever the correct term is, in a different way from a conventional vehicle.
Absolutely, yeah. And it is dependent on the move on the movement. So when you look at an ATV, it's got a very large saddle. Unfortunately, a lot of people think that's to carry more than one person. There are some ATVs out there that are designed and ergonomically designed to take two people on the machine. But the majority, 98% of the machines that are here on the UK market are single occupancy machines. But the reason that the saddle is so big is to allow you to move around in the saddle.
So because it's a different type of vehicle, it's got to be ridden in a different way. You're going to need training.
And that's where we come in. So at point of sale, we'll contact the customer and work out what their training requirements are. And we aim to get them on the quickest possible course, as local as possible to them that we can.
Is it a compulsory thing? Have they got to have this training, or could they, in theory, give the dealer a check and drive away?
Unfortunately, it's not theory. It's happening all the time. They are paying for the machine and they are just taking it away. Is it compulsory? Under the provision and use work equipment regulations, an employee must have appropriate training to be able to use the piece of work equipment that they've got. So, yes, it's law for those people to take training and for the employers to make sure that their employees are trained and that they refresh that training, certainly within a 5-year period.
What are the licensing requirements, Andy, for these?
There are actually no licensing requirements, providing you're going to be using it in an off-road situation. But when you come to using it on the farm, then the normal driving license restrictions will apply.
So somebody comes along, they take a course, you give them guidance, coaching, advice, and you have some golden rules, don't you, for operating one of these?
Yeah, we do. One, PPE, make sure that you wear a helmet. A helmet must always be worn. And take training. Training is important. And not just once you've taken the training, that's it. If you change your machine, it's always good to take that new machine into a safe learning environment and to see what it'll do right from the off. The third thing that is really important as well is to make sure that the machine is checked every day before use and that periodically it goes back to the dealer. And let the experts go through it and make sure that the machine's kept in tip-top condition.
They are great machines, and as you say, they go where others can't go. They're often perceived as being fun vehicles as well, but by their very nature, they can, in the wrong hands, be dangerous. So it kind of highlights, really, the importance of doing this thing properly. It might sound boring, it might sound all health and safety and so on, but lives are at stake here, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the main thing to look at with these machines is, yes, even people who are using them in a work environment do like to have a little play on them. And that's generally where things start to get out of hand. But it's being able to make that distinction between an off-road machine and a road machine, because these things, unless it is actually designed and made to go on the road, which would make it a quadricycle, they are really quite dangerous on a grip surface being a tarmac hard paved surface. So on the road it becomes a very, very different machine, which requires a different skill set to be able to ride the machine from there. And what we try to do with the training is to give people a taste of all of these things and to understand that. So when they're making a transition from being off-road, which many farmers do, and then have to go down the road to access another piece of their land, to ride on the road, it becomes a very different machine, and they've got to change their driving habits and the way they handle the machine to suit that accordingly.
What form does your training take? Do you actually sort of go out on a course with the trainees? How does it work?
Yeah, so the course takes around about the 5-hour mark, and the students will come along to us. There's a little bit of work in a classroom type environment where we're just discussing rider activity and responsibilities. But the majority of it is 16 lessons of actual practical riding. So we would start to do this in what we call a safe learning environment, which would be in a flat field around a coned area. and we teach the manoeuvres. So we would demonstrate the manoeuvres, then the students go out and do it, and then we coach them to perfect those manoeuvres or to understand some manoeuvres that they won't be able to do at all because of their physical abilities. So that's a very important part of that learning. At the end of the course, one of the last lessons is to go out on a trail ride to get into a real life situation, to tackle some hills and slopes and some very rutty, hilly ground. So, but that's dictated by what's available to us to train on, but also from the group that we've got there in front of us. We try to group the students to sort of like operations, if you will. So, you know, if people are doing airport control or security ground, they're probably not too interested in doing hills and rutty ground. So we try and group the people. So we're talking to like-minded people, and we can put those in those types of situations at the end of the course.
Do the trainees come out with a recognised qualification at the end of the course?
Okay, so it's an industry recognised qualification, whereby the people who manufacture and make these machines have had a big input in putting this course together for what people need to know. And it is an industry recognised qualification that we give at the end of it.
Oh, it's really good to hear, obviously, that you can go and do this. And it would seem daft not to, to be honest. Where could we go, Andy, for more information about EASI and what you do?
Okay, so dealers will always be able to give this information out. So any of our member dealers that are out there, the manufacturer's websites also, and also our website, which is quadsafety.org.
Andy Heitman, CEO of EASI. Fascinating stuff. Very, very useful information. And as I said, there really is no excuse for somebody purchasing one of these, or even if they've already got it, seeking training, making sure they keep themselves safe. Andy, thanks for joining us on the Farming Programme this morning.
Thank you.
Now, depending on how and where you buy the ATV, this training may be free, and it's available for a charge if you already own a quad bike or you buy one privately. Cereals 2024 was on in Hertfordshire recently, and while I was there, I had a chat with some of the exhibitors showing something new, starting with David Booty at Omex to tell us about their M36 Plus system.
It's a system for liquid fertiliser. The M stands for Multiflow, that's our brand name for NPK fertiliser. So if you like a liquid compound fertiliser, plus or minus sulphur, and the 36 Plus is because it can be spread with a standard farm sprayer to 36 metres and beyond with great accuracy.
What's new about it then?
It's new from Omex. It's being an NPK plus S blend that can go for a standard farm sprayer using fertiliser nozzles. And you can use it in the spring on cereals. You can use it on vegetable crops across the piece, really.
And how is it applied?
Through a standard farm sprayer, the only difference is you have to have fertiliser type jets on the nozzle that produce a large droplet, because the target is the soil, not the leaf of the plant. So you want a big splashy droplet that runs off any leaf that happens to be there at the time onto the soil.
One of the big problems often with spraying is calculating how much you're going to need. If you've got too much in the tank, what can you do with it?
Well, that's one of the benefits of a liquid system, because generally it's stored on a farm, in a farm tank, which we deliver to. Anything that's left in the sprayer at the end of the day can be pumped right back into the farm tank and used again. So there's no disposal issues, there's no packaging to get rid of. Any over that you have left can be used again.
And where could we go for more information on this wonderful new product, David?
Okay, well, there's more details on our website, omex.co.uk. And there's details of local contacts there if you want to speak to a local representative.
That's David Booty from Omex. Hutchinson's launched a new version of Omnia at Cereals. Oliver Wood, before you tell us what's new, for those who don't know, what is Omnia?
Omnia is a digital farming platform that up until now has been predominantly focused on precision farming, soil management, mapping and various things like that.
You have a new version which you're launching at Cereals, which you've described as the next generation in farm management software. What's new?
So the bits that we've added in have been, there's been a number of areas. One is to allow people to create spray plans, and so we've built new functionality for that, as well as a new database for checking to make sure that things can be used. There is a new stock management system, completely new, built from the ground up to allow for proper physical stock management. There's also a new field recording side of the platform that allows people to create tasks where you can then assign those tasks to operators, and then the records can then be completed in the field on the new version of our Scout app. Those records then sync directly back with the system. That then links back into the stock management, so when a record is done, the stock then comes out, and then all of the stock allocation from a costing point of view and also the machine costing point of view also then feeds into the field records.
So it's integrating everything, basically.
Completely that, yes. And for those that want to, they can operate a completely paperless farming system now.
Are you finding that's the way most farmers are going now?
Most farmers are wanting things that are easy to use and all link in and work. That is what our client base is telling us that they want.
I suppose two big questions. One is connectivity. Is this all online? Do they need to have a decent mobile signal? And what about data security?
So to answer your first question, the main platform is cloud-based, so a web-based tool. The app works offline, so that then when someone's out in the field and they don't have very good phone reception, then it could just be synced back when they come back to the office or go back home or whatever it happens to be. Security of data is something that is really important to our customers and is important to us. We've put in two significant measures within what it is we do. First of all, we've now got accreditation with ISO 27001, which is a information security management standard, where we have audits every year to make sure that we are managing data, we are developing, we're storing things in exactly the right way. And then the second part is that we're a founding member of the Farm Data Principles, which is a British data security and data transparency kind of forum. So yeah, we're a founding member of that.
Where could somebody go to find out more?
Best thing to do is go onto our website, which is omniadigital.co.uk, or go on Facebook, Instagram or Twitter.
Nottingham Trent University were demonstrating something new, a virtual reality hazard perception test. Professor David Crundall, who's this aimed at?
All of those tractor drivers who really don't get any sort of specific training or assistance for driving tractors on the roads. We know the DVSA hazard test has been around now for about 22 years, but it's very much about learner drivers in cars on roads. And really what we want to do here is create something that is vehicle specific for tractor drivers, hence why we've created our test based on tractor clips filming from tractors, and we've placed it in a VR headset so that people can look around in 360 degrees when trying to spot those hazards.
So what would be the difference then if I'm driving my car compared to driving a tractor? What different hazards are we looking out for?
Well, the hazards definitely change according to the vehicle that you're in. So, for instance, in a tractor, you're very concerned about overtaking vehicles cutting back in at speed, and, of course, oncoming traffic when those lanes are not quite wide enough. But there are other hazards which are even more specific to tractor drivers, such as overhanging foliage, which can get in the way of a cab, or extremely large potholes on some of the roads, which are less cared for than others in the rural areas.
Unfortunately, we don't have the best safety record in this industry compared to the majority. Is that why you felt that this was an area to target?
Yes, I think we have a big problem. Of course, the farming industry is one where we know there are fatalities. And if you look at 2022, there were 22 fatalities in the farmyard on the fields. But there were also 20 fatalities on the roads involving an agricultural vehicle. And those deaths aren't considered when we look at the 22 deaths in the farmyard. So What we're faced with is a fatality rate which is almost as high as the fatality rate on farms, but no one's really doing anything about agricultural vehicles on the road, so hopefully we're tackling that in one small way.
So how does the system work then? If I know we are on radio and you're demonstrating it here, so it's very much a visual thing. Just talk us through what you actually do. You put the headset on, then what?
Essentially, you will see 20 clips, and during those clips, you'll press a trigger button on your controller whenever you see a developing hazard, just like in the normal test. But also at the end of each clip, we'll ask you a question. That question might be, what happens next, or what would you do next? And if you were looking in the right place at the right time and you know how to drive a tractor safely, then you will be able to answer those questions and you'll be able to spot those hazards.
And how can we actually access this? Would somebody have to have their own VR headset? Can they go somewhere to do it?
Well, at the moment we're in a developmental phase, but once the test has been fully validated, we will be releasing this test on headsets to agricultural training colleges and the like. But we are also looking into bringing out various apps that we've got, various VR tests that we have through the VR stores that you can get. So the Meta Quest is obviously the biggest selling headset in the UK, and we are looking to bring out an app there, not just for tractors. That will also involve maybe HGVs and car-based hazards as well.
When do you think this might be available?
Well, our project runs to the end of October, so beyond that point we expect that we will have the app available in the headsets for things like agricultural colleges and other training establishments to purchase from us. And the first 200 headsets, we've promised to our sponsor that we will supply at cost price to as many organisations as we can.
Is there anywhere we can go now to find out more information about this?
Certainly we can. Our website at Nottingham Trent University will allow you to access information about that. So if you type my name in, David Crundall and Nottingham Trent University, you'll get access to that. Otherwise, we have our company, which actually develops hazard perception tests for fleet drivers as well, and that contains a lot more information, and that's esitusolutions.com. So if you go to that website, you'll see examples of our clips and see some of the blogs where we talk about the research that we've done.
Fascinating stuff. David, thank you.
Thank you.
Finally, an update on drone spraying and spreading following recent licence changes from Andy Sproson of Auto Spray Systems.
The Health and Safety Executive, or specifically the Chemical Regulations Department, have issued us an extrapolated trial permit for Slux HP. And with that as well, we have an aerial application permit approved. So we can spread these from the drone in the air.
So when you say a trial permit, does that mean it's not commercially available yet? You're still trialling it?
Yes, that's right. So we're going to demonstrate the efficacy of the drone, how the drone works, how it spreads the pellets. With that data, we're going to apply for an extension for minor use, or as what we used to call an off-label approval. And that's something we're going to submit in July.
Okay, so when do you think we might see one of these available to use on a real farm?
We're thinking the end of the year.
It's not that far away. So just for those who may have missed when we spoke a few months ago, talk us through what it will do.
The drone, it can lift 50 litres of liquid or 80 litres of granular. So again, all around the 50 kilo mark. We can spread and spray anything that you need. We have drift data where we are unlocking liquid pesticides, and we'll have more news on those in the next coming weeks. The list is growing and growing.
And I'm guessing the big advantage of this is in farmland, which is not accessible by your conventional sprayer.
Yeah, it's fair to say this is not going to replace your large spray machines. We would become inefficient in comparison. But like today, if it's raining, as soon as it stops, we can go out and put your slug pellets down where machinery cannot access.
Where can we find out more about this?
We've got a YouTube channel, because the concept is pretty alien to some people, so just follow us on Auto Spray Systems on YouTube, or you go to our website, autospraysystems.com.
Don't forget, Cereals is back in Lincolnshire at Andrew Ward's place at Leadenham next year on the 11th and 12th of June.
The Farming Programme.
Market reports.
Starting with livestock and Louth Market auctioneer Ed Middleton. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Steve. This week, prime heifers all in average 272.86 pence per kilo, and prime steers averaged all in 278.95 pence per kilo. Top price in the steers this week came from GL and M car of Louth at 289.5 pence per kilo, or £1,737 per head. In the heifers, top price in the pence per kilo were R Ray and Sons Limited of Lincoln at 297.5 pence per kilo, and in the pounds per head, GNS Brooks of Strubby at £1,638.75. This week we had just a few cool cows in the mix. Senegate Estates of Louth topped at £1,248.75. Onto the store cattle, steers all in averaged £1,077.50, and heifers all in averaged £1,035. Just moving back slightly, on Friday the 14th, we had the dispersal of the warmer herd of pedigree Lincoln Red cattle on behalf of HM and JM Needler at Ramby, Lincolnshire. An absolutely momentous day for this fantastic herd of cattle, and the prices didn't disappoint. A herd with over 60 years of history and 76 Supreme Championships under its belt. The top call of the day came from the bull Warmer Bartholomew, which is a top price of 5,500 guineas. And the top price in the cows and calves of the day was 4,200 guineas. Yearling heifers were very sought after on the day, topping at 2,500 guineas. Averages on the day, breeding bulls averaged £3,110.63. Cows and calves averaged £2,323.70, and heifers averaged £1,641.11. Moving on to the sheep, this week we had SQQ in the prime lambs of 381.76 pence per kilo, and an all-in average of £162.40. Lambs are really coming forward thick and fast now. Trades very, very slightly back on the week. Top spot in the lambs came from Shaw Brothers of Binbrook at £193, with their run averaging a fantastic £176.84. RH Holmes and Partnership of Ragby topped the pence per kilo at 422 pence per kilo. Onto the cull ewes, a very, very mixed show of ewes this week with an average of £92.23. Mules topped at £112 for R Ray and Sons Limited of Lincoln. And finally, ewes and lambs, a few about this week again, topped at £110 per life. I'm Edward Middleton, auctioneer at Louth Livestock Market.
Thanks, Ed. And with the grain market update, Open Fields' Kit Dickinson. Morning, Kit.
Well, good morning, Steve. Prices are on the defensive as recent weather concerns and their impact on the global production dissipated, to be replaced by talk of harvest pressure and lagging demand, which saw exporters lower their offer prices. We now reside in a world dominated by algorithms and managed money, with derivative markets feeding one another information. Matif and London futures lacked direction earlier in the week, closing marginally higher with CBOT market closed, but have now resumed on their downward trajectory at the end of the week, led by the US markets. The old adage of big crops get bigger does not apply in the reverse to smaller crops get smaller. It would appear some analysts increase the Russian, Ukrainian and EU crop forecast while axing demand. There has been much talk of increased demand for maize with the expense of wheat fed by the consumer, which has also been reflected in last week's USDA report. Although it has not been noted that the wheat and maize spread has narrowed significantly in the last 2 weeks, which could change the calculation inclusion going forward. So not necessarily all negative news. Looking at feed barley and malting barley, as we know, the UK spring malting plantings were late in this year, and the last thing the crop needed would have been for a dry period, which fortunately we didn't get. The wet, relatively mild conditions following planting allowed the crop to develop slowly and move through the growth stages at a normal rate. A few weeks ago, concerns did start to creep in around too much wet weather, but the weather pattern has now changed to almost ideal conditions to finish the spring barley crop off. The crop has developed well and looks surprisingly good despite its poor start. The brewer, distiller and maltster demand is still low, which is being supported by the recent slowdown in feed grain markets. Malting barley premiums are still historically high, but you can see this coming under pressure if the crop continues to develop well and yields are better than expected at harvest. The UK malting barley export programme is very slow to get started, and opportunities to sell October to December are currently non-existent. Oilseed rape, despite bouncing earlier this week, Matif is away off its recent highs seen at the end of May. There's been a lack of news to keep the fuel rally going, along with technical selling after Matif hit a resistance around the €500 level. As we've seen, pressure on the European markets as harvest nears. It's a similar story for Chicago soybeans, which are well down from the highs seen last month on technical selling. The latest USDA weekly crop progress data for the US soybeans was down 2 points, from 70% good to excellent, but the highest for this calendar week since 2020, analysts have said, is expected a slight decline from the good to excellent ratings. So looking at prices this week, feed wheat July 170 to 180, moving forward into new crop 172 to 182 off the combine, 185 to 195 for November, February 190 to 200, May 194 to 204. Milling wheat premiums for new crop are still circa £65. Feed barley July-August, new crop 145 to 153, November 158 to 168, February 161 to 171, and May 164 to 174. For malting barley premiums, please speak to your Openfield farm business manager. Oilseed rape, August 354 to 364 off the combine, November 366 to 376, and February 370 to 380.
Thanks, Kit.
The Farming Programme. 5-day forecast.
Summer seemed to finally arrive on the solstice last Friday. This week sees daytime highs in the mid-20s Celsius, plenty of sun, light and variable breezes at last. I'm off to Groundswell this week. You can hear about that next week on the Farming Programme podcast, along with a look at grass growing and interesting things you can do with wool. I'm Steve Orchard. Until then, have a great week.
The Farming Programme with Arrowquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, BSI ISO 9001 accredited.